This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Everybody agrees it was a mess 4 years ago, and to be fair to the television networks, NPR's election night coverage was no exception. After red-faced apologies, considerable soul-searching, and a congressional investigation, we all tried again 1 week from tonight. With polls suggesting that the presidential race is just about even, the media vow to be more cautious, while the campaigns promise to patrol the polls with regiments of lawyers. It looks like it may be a long night. Later in the program, a cultural history of the vampire from Bram Stoker to Buffy. But first, election night 2004. Where do you plan to be a week from tonight? And how will you be following the results? Whether you're a grassroots activist or a couch potato, throwing a party or organizing for one, our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Since most of us will be watching the results on TV, we've invited Jonathan Storm, the TV critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer, to join us. He's in a studio at the Gallup Organization in Princeton, New Jersey, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil.
I'm going to play some tape from the 2001 congressional hearings into the election night 2000 debacle. This is Representative Billy Tawson of Louisiana, then the chairman of the Telecommunications Subcommittee, talking about the use of exit polls to project winners.
The networks themselves were criticizing the use of exit polling, and we're questioning whether exit polling was in fact a valuable tool or a dangerous tool. You'll see quotes from none other than Walter Cronkite suggesting that exit polling was a dangerous tool, from the head of CBS announcing that this was not something that networks ought to be doing because this was just guessing and projecting rather than reporting the actual news of an election.
And again, that tape from 2001. So this time around, Jonathan Storm, are the networks still going to use exit polls?
Absolutely.
And how are they going to use them? How is it going to be different from last time?
Well, they threw out the organization that did the polling before, which, to be fair, for 40 years, you didn't really have a close election. And so if the polling was off by 4 or 5%, it didn't really matter. And nobody really anticipated the closeness of the election, and nobody saw the faultiness of the polling techniques. So what they've done is they did it in 2002. They organized themselves, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, Fox News, and the AP, Associated Press, organized themselves into something called the National Election Pool. And then they went out and hired two distinguished, I think, for lack of a better word, polling organizations, commercial polling organizations, one Mitofsky International, the other Edison Media Research, and put the heads of those two organizations in charge of the exit polling and analysis on election night.
And one thing, so they're going to be asking different questions or being more cautious in general?
Well, they're going to have 13 separate polls before the elections, and rather than three, which is what they had last time.
Mm-hmm.
And they've analyzed the data from the 2000 election, and they've discovered Tawson and even Walter Cronkite, everyone is afraid of science because people don't really understand numbers. It turns out that the actual votes that were reported by election officials were also incorrect. And have always been incorrect, but usually it hasn't mattered because the margins have been large enough. So it's not just the exit polling that was faulty. It was actually the votes that are reported by county tabulators, and they will always be incorrect. And what these people have done is analyzed when and how they were incorrect in the past and built in a kind of fudge factor to decide whether if Joe Baloney in Butte, Montana, says that Bush has 50,002 votes and Kerry has 50,001 votes, that really they both only have 49,500 votes.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that tends to drive people a little crazy is, you know, 1% of the report of the vote is reported in and such a network projects so-and-so the winner.
Yes. The networks, since time immemorial, have been in competition to get the things first, whatever it is. This time, for the first time that I know of, they are not going to be competing with each other to be first. And in fact, David Borman, who's the guy at CNN, the Washington bureau chief, has said that he thinks most networks don't want to be first this time. So there's not going to be this kind of competition. They've all agreed also to not report a state in the victory column until all the polls have closed in that state. That was something that Towson and others brought up in the case of Florida, which is in two time zones, that when they declared for Gore at 8 o'clock on election night, that all the people in the western part, in northwestern Florida, all said, well, hey, I'll just stay home because Gore already won.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to do that this time. They're going to wait until 9 o'clock at least to declare which candidate has won. So that's a slight difference. But they will be declaring with small percentages of the vote actually in based on exit polls.
And will they declare, if the result is in, a winner before the polls are all closed in California, Hawaii, Alaska?
Yes, they will. I can't say that definitively. They won't say whether they will, but you know what that means in the case of news organizations. If they believe somebody has, for instance, 320 electoral votes already in the bag before 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock Pacific time, they're going to give the election to that person. I believe that.
And one thing that they've done to I think insulate themselves from this competitive pressure, that desire to be first, at least some of the networks are isolating their their decision callers, and so they're not watching the other networks.
Yes, they're going into the soundproof booth, so as not to know what's going on anywhere else. Interestingly, Fox says they have always done that. I believe that I'm not sure which of the other ones. I think NBC is doing it. I think that they're trying to isolate themselves. CBS, on the other hand, is bringing their decision desk right into the newsroom. It's always been separate. And I'm sure that they, being in the newsroom, will know exactly what's going on elsewhere. But you can just be certain that they are all going to be very, very cautious. I can just hear Dan Rather going on for 10 minutes about how cautious he will be mm-hmm. rather than actually reporting anything. It may actually get annoying on election night hearing how cautious everybody is.
Yeah, indeed. I think in one of your stories you were saying that CBS is going to be especially cautious this year.
Yeah, CBS, obviously, because of the so-called National Guard memos that were questionable, I think, at best, that they reported that criticized Bush's National Guard service, they're under the gun. Many people actually believe that that's one of the main election issues, the quality of CBS news coverage. So they're particularly nervous about that. Linda Mason, who's been at CBS since 1966 and spoke to my colleague at the Inquirer, Gail Schuster, talked specifically about how that she said we're under an incredible spotlight.
We're talking about election night 2004, how it may be different from 4 years ago. Our guest is Jonathan Storm of the Philadelphia Inquirer. If you'd like to join us, the telephone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, our email address, TOTN@npr.org. Let's talk with Larry, who's with us from Minneapolis.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm wondering if we should really be considering revamping exit polling. My theory is that the exit polling in Florida was right and that there were more votes cast for Gore than Bush, but then they weren't all counted, and that perhaps the networks were actually calling it correctly the first time in terms of what actually had happened.
Yeah, Jonathan Sorum, some people say that if the people leaving the polls in Palm Beach County said they voted for Gore when in fact they apparently voted for Pat Buchanan by mistake.
Well, unfortunately, what you think you did and what you did are two different things, and you can be on either side of the issue as to who should have been the president the last 4 years, but the fact of the matter was that by the time all the votes were officially counted, Bush was the winner. So whether the networks had the intentions of the voters correct or not is really somewhat irrelevant.
Well, I don't think it's irrelevant if the issue is whether exit polling is accurately getting how people are voting. I mean, just because the vote tallies in the end weren't the same as the exit polling doesn't necessarily mean the exit polling was wrong. There were a lot of votes that weren't counted.
Well, I think that's part of the issue that Joe Lenski, who's head of Edison Media Research, and Matosky have brought up, that when people criticize the exit polling and say that's why the networks got it wrong, they turn around and say, no, they've analyzed the votes and find that, in fact, the actual counted votes are frequently incorrect. They almost have to be incorrect. If you're counting 100,000 votes, you're not going to be right. Mm-hmm. And when you get down to a margin of 500 votes?
526, I think.
Out of how many million?
Many.
Yeah, there's just no way that you can be accurate in that kind of time frame. There's going to be also a difference this year. Everyone watching is going to be 70,000 times more skeptical than they were in 2000. And people also are aware that most likely by whatever time it is you go to bed, you're not really going to know who won the election.
Larry, thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And we're calling, asking people also, obviously, if you have questions about how it's being organized, but also, what are you doing on election night? And let's take a call from Bob in Panama City, Florida.
Yes, I wanted to make a comment and maybe a question for your visitor, and that is the networks have so horribly mishandled the information, the accuracy of information during this election, particularly with regards to the president, that I don't know how anyone can possibly trust the polls when you can. I mean, how do you know what poll is can be trusted versus a poll which can't? And how can the exit polls, if you're dealing with networks which can't be trusted anyway, why would anyone pay any attention to them?
Well, Jonathan Storm, I think that's a blanket indictment there.
I think that's a very interesting point of view, and I think that the damage that Dan Rather and CBS have done to television news credibility is perhaps incalculable. When somebody can sit there and say all the networks have totally mishandled all the information, especially in regards to the president in this election, especially in regards to the election, you know, they basically, one network mishandled one bit of evidence. Other networks may appear to be, in your point of view, biased one way or the other. You can argue about that till the cows come home. I think the credibility of news organizations has been damaged. I don't think the news organizations deserve to have that credibility damaged as much as it has been.
I would agree. I would comment that you know if the media would have some sort of way to even police itself, or the FTC, for example, you know, some of the flagrant violations of the New York Times comes out with, that's just, that does incalculable damage to the entire media. And things like, you mentioned Dan Rather, for one, but I also notice that I'm able to access internet news sites internationally that report news which our networks don't even report. And then if they do, sometimes it's a week late. I know I'm deviating from the topic a bit, but my point is the credibility or believability of the network.
Well, let me tell you what they're doing on election night. They basically have hired an outside agency to look at all the data, and these two men, one of whom was actually the man who helped invent the first exit poll, which was in Kentucky in 1967, the first political exit poll. The original exit polls were done by who else? Movie makers, to see how people like their movies. These two guys are going to look at the data, and they are going to advise all of the networks when it's time to make the calls. Now, the networks retain control over that, but in some way, the network has set up an outside agency to do this work, and perhaps hoping that will give them credibility. These two companies make lots and lots of money doing research on all sorts of things, including, Neil, how radio talent should behave.
Huh.
And these are money-making companies, and this is their job every day, every year. Well, so I think they're doing that to maybe get a little more credibility.
I can only comment with the with what everybody comments on when we talk about polls. Well, they've never called me. Bob, thank you very much for the phone call. We're talking about election night 2004. We want to hear your plans. Are you going to be glued to the TV set, patrolling the polls, or maybe popping in a video and pretending none of this is happening? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address, TOTN@npr.org. Back after a short break, I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about new media strategies to cover election night this year. A little bit later in the program, we're also going to be talking to representatives of the campaigns about the legions of lawyers that are spreading out around the country and how they may influence what we see and experience on election night. Right now, we're talking to Jonathan Storm, TV critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. You're invited, of course, to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address, totn@npr.org. And let's take a question from Anne, and Anne's calling from Fremont, California.
Hi, yes, my very first election that I was able to vote in was in 1980 when Ronald Reagan was first elected. I was working at the polling place. I knew that my vote was in that box at that polling place, and I saw people drive up in their cars, hear on the radio that Ronald Reagan had already won, and they would turn around and leave without ever voting, and I knew my vote was still in that box. So I hate it when the media says, oh, there's only anecdotal evidence that people don't vote when it's forecast in advance, when our polling places aren't even closed yet. To have them announcing who the winner is really upsetting.
Do you think the news media should sit on news big enough that so-and-so has been elected president of the United States?
Yes, they do. I think they should sit on it until after the polling place is closed. And I'm just waiting for that day where an exit poller asks me who I voted for as I leave the the polling booth so I can fully let him know, or her, what I think about it. I'm going to be spending election night at my local library processing votes as they come through with our electronic voting.
Okay. Jonathan Storm, I cut you off. Go ahead.
Well, that's always the problem the news media has. You reveal the name of the 14-year-old rape suspect, and everybody comes down on you. The point of the news media is to report what happens. It's not the point of the news media to decide that, well, we should report this or report that. There are very few instances when the news media should not be reporting things, as far as I'm concerned. All of the networks take a kind of disingenuous root on this thing. They say, well, Congress could pass a law forbidding us reporting that. So they're trying to have it both ways. I think they're the news media. If they know something and it's true, they should report it.
And thanks very much for the call. We suspect you disagree with that, but thank you for your call anyway.
Well, it's fortune telling. It's not news.
No, it's not. They've counted the votes, and they have never reported the winner of a national election in a situation that was, the polls were still open and votes were not turned away, even in 2000.
Okay. And thanks very much.
Thank you.
Here's an email from Sherry Batazzo in Boise, Idaho. I'm having a party that night. I think I want to make it a night to remember if it goes my way. If not, there will be beer at the party to get us through. So let's go now to Rachel. Rachel is calling from Perrysburg. It doesn't say where Perrysburg is.
Perrysburg's in Ohio. We're one of the swing states.
Go ahead, Rachel.
Well, I have three sons, 13, 9, and 7, and they have always gone to the polls with me, even when they were very small, and they are going to the polls this year with me to watch me vote, and then we are spending the night keeping our fingers crossed and hoping that our candidate passes. But they've been actively involved in both the local election and the national election. I think that's the best thing we can possibly do to get the voter turnout, is to get children to understand the overall process at a very, very early age.
And from everything I've heard about what may happen this year in Ohio, you may want to pack some snacks while you wait online with your kids.
Absolutely. It's going to be early in the morning, unfortunately, before they go to school. But one of the proud things that we do here in Perrysburg is we have a mock election for the children, and they actually get to cast ballots themselves and wear a sticker that says, I voted.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a neat process that we do here to get kids involved at a really young age.
Well, Jonathan Storm, this is a civic exercise. This is a chance for the entire country to learn some stuff.
I need to caution people. It could be just sort of like the millennium bug. The whole thing is a big hysteria. But people who think they're going to know who won this election by the time children go to bed, even if they're children who stay up hanging out with the people you're going to be interviewing in the next half hour, the vampires, I personally don't think anybody's going to know who won this election until the sun is up, at least.
Rachel, have a good time at the polls.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. One thing that you wrote about in the Philadelphia Inquirer, Jonathan Storm, is that election night will look a little different on TV.
Well, leave it to the TV to try to lure you in with bells and whistles. CNN has taken over the NASDAQ electronic stock exchange headquarters at Times Square. They have 100 big screens. Apparently, the cameras can only reach 72 of them, I think. But they're going to have 72 screens filled with data that they can go to at any moment. NBC, of course, has Tim Russert's famous little white grease board where he draws little pictures and tells you exactly what's going on in a way that I think is actually pretty amazing. I think he deserves a lot of credit. But to augment that, NBC is going to put a map of the United States on the skating rink at Rockefeller Center and have little pages carrying the states, red for Bush, blue for Kerry, and putting them in place on this gigantic jigsaw puzzle, which they will then project somehow up onto the wall of Rockefeller Center. And they're going to have a bar graph in lights, blue and red, again, going up the wall somewhere else. It's going to be pretty spectacular.
And inevitably, one of those pages will grow up to be President of the United States and later be able to say, I carried California back in 2004. let's get a call in from Danielle. Danielle's calling from San Carlos, California.
Hi. In 2001, or 2000, I believe one of Bush's cousins was in the Fox newsroom when Fox was the first to call Florida for Bush. In 2004, will the networks ban the family members of candidates from the process of calling states?
I'm pretty sure that the family members of networks are banned from four of the five major news sources, that being CBS, NBC, ABC, and CNN. What they do at Fox News, you never can tell.
Thank you.
Danielle, thank you very much for the call. And let's see if we can get Clara on the line. Clara's calling from Portland, Oregon.
Hi there. I'm involved in planning an event that's actually, ironically, called Fingers Crossed, and it's aimed at bringing together the young voters. This election is deemed as one of the most important in our generation, and it is a 21-plus event. But the festivities include, like, local music and performance art and an appearance by our former Democratic Governor John Kitzhaber here in Oregon. And this is such a big election, and it's so exciting how many young voters have come out and become involved and volunteered, and just trying to add to that and bring them out again, and whether or not we know by the end of the night who our president is or any of the other races going on, it is really about the coming together and celebration of the voting process.
Clara, thank you very much, and because of the pressures of time, I have to say goodbye to Jonathan Storm. We appreciate you joining us today, Jonathan.
Thank you very much, Neil. I've enjoyed it.
Jonathan Storm, a TV critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer, joined us from the studios of the Gallup organization in Princeton, New Jersey, and they had to switch over at 3:30 Eastern time to somebody else who had reserved their studio. That's why we lost him. So, Clara, thank you very much for the call. And how many people are you expecting at this event? I think Clara's left us. Anyway, Americans are far more worried about politics and the legal challenges than they were 4 years ago. Well, that might have to do with some experience. Thousands of lawyers for both parties will fan out across the country to monitor polling places and precincts. And next Tuesday, we'll talk now about the unprecedented legal coverage this election will get. Joining us from the Kerry headquarters here in Washington, D.C. is Jenny Backus, senior campaign consultant. And nice of you to be with us today.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Is it true the Democrats have trained 10,000 local attorneys across the country to send them to the polls to guard against voter intimidation?
Well, what's true is that Democrats are going to have hundreds of thousands of people out at the polls on Election Day because we are predicting a record turnout thanks to activities like you heard just now from Clara and earlier on the show. We think there's an unprecedented interest in this election, and we are going to be ready to make sure that everybody who is eligible to vote and wants to cast their vote can do so with no problems whatsoever and feel confident their vote's counted. So one of the things that we are going to do is have people on hand just in case anything comes up with problems or any questions that people have. We'll have some people there to answer their questions. But our job really is to try to get the massive amounts of people that we think are going to turn out on this election to make sure that they get right through the line. Did you know, Neil, that already 2.5 million people have voted in this country?
I knew that many people had already voted in this country. But you were saying that all these people would get to vote with no problems whatsoever. Well, that's unlikely.
I don't think so. I mean, look, we are operating at the Democratic Party, and John Kerry, I know, is operating under the assumption that this election is actually going to go very, very smoothly. Election officials have been working hard, Democrats, Republicans, and independents across the country, to make sure that, you know, they've done all the work to make sure that ballots are understandable, that they're legal. We have actually been working with our legal strategy here at the, with the Democrats is to try to prevent recounts. We're in the recount prevention business. We don't want to see anything happen further down the line. So we've actually been trying to come into states early. We put people on the ground. When we put our campaign teams on the ground, we put organizers on the ground to make sure that, you know, ballot, we didn't get another butterfly ballot. Mm-hmm. You know, people were talking to local election officials about how Election Day was going to work. Were there going to be enough ballots printed? I mean, our basic operating principle as a party, and I think it's not just a Democratic thing, it's a national thing, is that we think that everybody, you know, who is eligible to vote should be able to vote, and we want to make it easier for people to vote. I mean,
yet we have a situation partly as a result of this unprecedented interest in this campaign. You're right about that. But there are plenty of places that we were reading about in Ohio, Pennsylvania, other swing states where there are more people registered than live there.
Well, that, again, you know, you have to be really careful. I mean, you're going to have, I knowing how fair you are, you're going to have a Republican on in probably in a few minutes.
Yep.
And I think that there's a very interesting thing happening right now with what the Republicans are closing out their campaign on. They're not talking about their candidate very much. They're not talking about their platform. But what they seem to sort of deliberately be doing is trying to sort of raise a lot of questions about the legitimacy and the integrity of this election. Now, I think, and a lot of people think, that that's just a political tactic. If you look inside all of their claims of fraud and confusion, you know, they melt away faster than butter, you know, a stick of butter on an ear of corn in the middle of August. They don't hold up. Let's start with the thing that you just said. You know, there's more people registered than live there. People move, and election officials and laws that are written in states and on the national level try to protect people's rights by holding them on the rolls. They err on the side of the voter. And so people, if you've moved, your name may still be on a voting list from where you lived before. The last time I checked in this country, it wasn't fraudulent or illegal to move. In fact, a lot of people do it. So, again, you know, looking, if people's names are on the rolls, election officials are working really hard right now, and they're working hard to clean up their voting rolls. They're working very hard to make sure that all the right people are on there, and people should be confident. I personally, as a voter, would rather, you know, I just want to be able to cast my vote on Election Day, and I know I'm going to, you know, vote once, and I want to make sure that I'm not going to vote in more than one place, but if, let's, God forbid, something, you know, you want to have that protection, and you want to always err on the side of the voter.
Jenny, very quickly, do you think that when Morning Edition starts the day after the election on Wednesday the 3rd, we're going to know who won?
I think we are. I think this is going to be, both parties are putting their heart and soul into it. I think we've got a message and a candidate, John Kerry, that is offering a vision of hope. Unlike the Republicans,
Jenny, we'll take that as a yes.
And it is a yes. Thank you, Neil.
Thank you very much.
Having me on.
Jenny Backus, a senior consultant to the Kerry campaign. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Jenny was psychic. Joining us now from the Republican National Committee is Robert Trainum, senior advisor to the chairman of the Republican National Committee, Ed Gillespie. He's with us from RNC headquarters here in Washington. And welcome.
Hi, Neil.
Why are the Republicans sending lawyers to polling places this year?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We're not necessarily sending lawyers to polling places, unlike the Democrats that are sending 10,000 trial lawyers across the country. What we're doing is we're empowering the voter. The registered voters out there that are eligible to vote, we're empowering them to make their choice come next Tuesday. Now, that isn't to say that we're not going to have resources on the ground in every single state to ensure a seamless process. But, you know, the bottom line is that our friends on the other side want this to be decided, this election to be decided by trial lawyers. We want this to be decided by the voters.
I see, the trial lawyers. As you know, there's been intimations that Republicans are trying to intimidate legally registered voters from not participating.
Nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, we have registered a record number of 2 million individuals in this country that are eligible to vote, and the Republican Party and President Bush does not condone any type of voter intimidation whatsoever.
Where are the hotspots going to be? Obviously, Florida, for one.
Well, I think in all areas where there are some voter fraud. You know, Neil, there are over 250 reported articles out there, news articles out there in 15 states that list fictional characters. characters like Mary Poppins, Dick Tracy, and George Foreman that are registered to vote.
Mm-hmm.
46,000 individuals are registered to vote, not only just in Florida, but also in New York at the same time. We have individuals in Ohio that have used a hotel or a vacant lot as their place of residence. So this is a big issue. It's a big deal.
And we've heard reports, of course, that both sides have been involved in this sort of chicanery.
Well, I can't speak for the Democrats, but I can certainly speak for the Republicans that we certainly do not have anything to do with those type of incidences whatsoever.
So what are you most concerned about? And as you say, you're going to have, I think both sides will have flying squads ready to race to the state capitol, to the Secretary of State's office if necessary. Tallahassee, perhaps in Ohio as well?
Well, the thing that I think that's most disturbing is a 66-page voting manual out there that the Democratic National Committee released with the in concert with the Kerry Edwards campaign last week that specifically says that to launch preemptive strikes, if you will. In other words, if there are no signs of voter intimidation, launch a preemptive strike. That's very, very disturbing because basically what it says is that if everything's okay, it's not okay. Go out there and cause some ruckus or cause trouble. And that's certainly not something that we want to do whatsoever. But clearly the Kerry Edwards campaign wants to do that.
They're trying to deliberately disrupt the election when there are no problems.
According to their 66-page voting manual.
And where did you get a copy of this?
Well, it's interesting because on Meet the Press just this past Sunday, Chairman Terry McAuliffe acknowledged the fact that there was a DNC voting document that specifically said that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, the Republican lawyers, are these, I assume some are staff, some are being paid, and many are volunteers?
Well, again, I keep using the word lawyer on our side, and that's not entirely accurate. Our get out the vote operation is determined by the states, and it's not. We certainly don't have tens and tens of thousands of trial lawyers gallivanting around the country trying to decide this election. Again, we want this election to be decided by the voters, not by trial lawyers.
And the same question I put to Jenny Backus when that first newscast comes up on Morning Edition, 5:01 a.m. Wednesday morning. Do you think we're going to know who has won the election?
I feel pretty confident that we're going to know who won the election. And I know for a fact that it's going to be President Bush.
Okay. Thank you very much, Robert Tranum. Have a great week and a great election night.
Thank you, Neil.
Robert Tranum, senior advisor to the RNC chairman. That wraps up our election night preview. When we come back from a short break, we're going to leave behind polls for stakes and election night for creatures of the night. We're going to have a history of that blood-sucking matinee mainstay, Dracula. If you have any questions about this vampire's history, cultural or financial or otherwise, give us a phone call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.